It's time now for History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history with the one and only Scott Washington, history guru, joining us here now in the studio for a look back before we take a look ahead. How are you?
Well, doing great, Aaron, and I could say the same about you as a history guru yourself.
Well, try to be.
And it's very complimentary. Well, this is a great week. There's always interesting things happening. Of course, we have these funerals of famous folks going on. That's big in the news. Coming up, but there are some other things that happened this week that are kind of noteworthy in themselves. For instance, on August 28th, 1963, there was a march in Washington, D.C., and there was a gentleman who gave a speech, "I Have a Dream." Of course, we know him as Martin Luther King. And what a great dream, and we need dreams to bring us forward. So not only do we need that history to remind us of where we've been, we need dreams to give us an idea of where we're going.
Absolutely.
And history can not only be inspirational, it can be those moments where we go, you know, we can learn from this. Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, strikes August 29th, 2005. In fact, the locals down there still refer to it as the storm. They won't
we'll
call it Katrina. They'll just say the storm.
I don't know how long that's going to, they're going to continue to refer to it as the storm. That's like the most significant thing.
Those who lived through it, and certainly a fair amount of people relocated all over the country, including up here in the Triangle, Music Maker Foundation, Hillsboro, which helped save the blues and a lot of these musicians, helped relocate a number of musicians up to this area. So I like to call this area New Orleans North in terms of the music you'll hear sometimes.
It really is one of those things that, I mean, you don't really, it doesn't really hit you if you haven't lived through it or you haven't experienced it.
That's
but
right.
Just the events like that just completely send your life off at a different angle. And that's true
right.
of literally everyone who lived in New Orleans and around New Orleans. Or we're talking millions of people whose lives are different now from what they would have been because of that storm that weekend 13 years ago.
And apparently, researching that some, and about 6 months later, it came out that there were some detailed reports that were given to President Bush a couple of days preceding it about potential impacts. But at that point, I think people were still thinking, well, it's, you know, another hurricane. We don't want to get people excited. And what are we going to do? How are we going to evacuate, you know, a million people out of a city? Certainly the levees will hold. And I think we've all realized
I remember when that first happened, the storm was barreling down on New Orleans, and it was a Category 5. And by the time it actually made landfall, I think it had downgraded to a 3.
Yes.
And it didn't hit New Orleans. It went off to the east, and hit, I think, Mississippi.
And
as soon as that happened, when the storm weakened a little bit and it veered off to the east, my first reaction, and I think the reaction that a lot of people initially had, was, wow, what a relief.
Yes.
We dodged a bullet.
That's
Then things continued to develop and the levees broke. And
and that was the flooding was really the
flooding was
catastrophe.
The bad. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the response, because people just didn't quite grasp how severe an issue that was, that spills over number of days. But the people have recovered in many ways, and it's that's but it's still there are these eerie testaments, like if you go into the Ninth Ward and see these flat
abandoned.
I mean just abandoned these and I asked my daughter, and you know, in honesty's sake, yes, she is in New Orleans, but I asked her, I said, why are these blank cement, why don't people rebuild? They said the houses disappeared, and they didn't have flood insurance. And now all those properties are still tied up in litigation as to exactly what's going to happen.
And this is another reminder of just how important history is and how important it is to learn from history, because we talk about Martin Luther King's speech and the March on Washington. That was 1963. That was 55 years ago. We're still having the same debates today. There's a lot that we have not learned from that. And we'll think about the response
dreams.
That have not been fulfilled, that are still very far away from being fulfilled. And we have this response to Hurricane Katrina, which was paltry. And we didn't learn from that. 13 years later, we're having the same debate. 13 years later, Hurricane Maria happens, or 12 years later, yes. Hurricane Maria happens. We should be having the same debate. And the only thing that we've learned from Hurricane Katrina is, man, don't put that in the news. Like, bury it as far down.
And that's not the way it should be.
Yeah.
It should be we should not wait till disaster strikes and go, oh, now we respond. We should be able to learn from history and have that ability to project forward and go, what can we do to make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, but it's the same failure of federal response. It's the same failure to anticipate. It's the same. So,
well, I heard one point somebody made a good observation. Sometimes it's a failure of imagination to say the what ifs and what would happen, and can we plan for that? Can we have a plan B, C, D, E?
Yeah.
And I think there is some validity to that. And certainly when we look at history, one thing you just said about how disruptive events can be certainly applies to so many events. We think of wars, but sometimes there's just social movements that can be important. I do think of an interesting one. This is in 413 BC on August 27th, and we can date this because there was a Peloponnesian War going on. And but there was an eclipse that happens, and it so frightened the Athenians that they delayed moving their forces from Syracuse for 27 days, and this delay gave an advantage to their enemies, who then defeated their fleet and army. But we can actually date this because we can go scientifically and say this
when
was happening.
When did this happen? Yeah.
Which I find kind of really
was this a lunar eclipse? The thing that we've got here says lunar eclipse. Can you imagine being? I've been outside and I've observed lunar eclipses, and I've observed them because I was told that there was a lunar eclipse last night. Go out, look up at the moon, you'll see the shadow going over, and it's really cool. If people hadn't told me that, I might have been outside just walking around doing my thing and not even noticed that anything was going on in the skies above me.
Well, of course, remember, at that time, there is no light pollution. So the skies... people are going outside, they're telling stories, navigating by the stars. So anything celestial happens, that's seen as, oh my gosh, what's happening?
All right.
So I think those are kind of interesting. Now, that's a little bit different in terms of disruptive
and
events.
And then they waited 27 days, right? After so they waited
so
until
delay can be a problem.
Yeah, delay can be a problem, but they're so scared of a lunar eclipse that they wait 27 days until apparently right before the next full moon, like the day before. Like, oh crap, we got to get out of here. And then it's too late.
But it also shows you that when you have disruptive events going on, delay is not necessarily the right option.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to say, what's going on, and then move forward. And that's true whenever we see battles happening in history, whether the Revolutionary or Civil War battles, or these kind of events, which I find kind of
there's that scene in Independence Day, right? The movie where Judd Hirsch plays one of the scientists, or Jeff Goldblum plays one of the scientists, and he keeps trying to warn the government about what's coming, and they're like, no, everything's fine. There's got to be a Jeff Goldblum character in the Peloponnesian War. Some scientists who are like, guys, it's just a lunar eclipse. We're fine.
Right,
we can go.
Okay.
Like, no, we'll stay. We'll stay. And Jeff Goldblum is just shaking his fist in despair.
Yes. There always is. Well, you know, it's kind
Syracuse finds a way.
All right, now you're going to have to answer. We're going to take a right turn here.
All right,
because
all
this
right.
one is, I still have got to understand, or maybe you have some insights to this. September 1st, 1807, Aaron Burr is arrested with a militia of over 60 men and put on trial for treason. Now, this is the guy who shoots Hamilton,
right?
And that becomes, of course, the musical.
And that just launches him on a whole new direction.
He's on the $10 bill, but why? Do you have any more insights into what Aaron Burr was planning or doing?
Fun fact: no, I don't, because nobody does.
This is the great
history mystery of Aaron Burr. So he shoots Hamilton, kills him, is like he's in disgrace. He leaves the vice presidency, and then he just goes off out to the I'm only picking up on like what I know about this. There are other people who know more, way more than me on this. But he goes off out west, and he's found later having raised this militia for what reason? Obviously, he's not going
to
say.
Didn't they think to ask the militia people just exactly why were you hired?
So it's so there's rumors that he was planning on coming back and trying to take over something. It was not clear
so
what his plan was.
So a conspiracy theorist, is that what you're saying?
Well, there was definitely this is one of those cases where there definitely was a conspiracy.
Yeah.
It's just what direction was the conspiracy going in? Was he trying to go to Mexico? Was he trying to come back to the States? It's very much unknown.
It's one of those ones that I've puzzled, and when I bump into this one, I kind of go, what is going on here? Why, how did Aaron Burr get tangled up in this? And he is acquitted, isn't he, eventually?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because, like, you can't...
He wasn't saying?
There's no... And they're faced with this evidence, like, we don't know what's going on. There's not enough evidence. This is the same guy who almost schemed his way to the presidency in 1800.
Yes.
He was the vice presidential nominee back when... This is the fun story about the Electoral College that
yes.
I like to tell. Where
not
prior
electrical,
to
but electoral.
Electoral,
yeah.
Right? Back before they changed, they had to amend the Constitution after this to change the rules. But the initial Electoral College was every elector cast two votes. And whoever finishes first gets to be the president. Whoever finishes second is the vice president. And that works fine until you have political parties with running mates. And
right.
then if you're a Democratic elector, you vote for Jefferson and Burr. And if you were a Republican elector, you vote for Adams and Pinckney. So Jefferson and Burr end up with the same number of electoral votes.
Wow.
And then it goes to the House of Representatives, and they've got to choose. And Hamilton's instrumental in getting Jefferson elected, even though he hated Jefferson because he hated Burr more. But all of that...
I'm so glad I asked this question.
Yeah, all of that was almost never happened because there was one elector who was a Burr supporter, wanted Burr to be the president, so he cast his electoral votes for Aaron Burr and some other guy, not Jefferson.
Oh my God.
And had he been able to do that, mm-hmm. Burr would have had one more vote than Jefferson,
wow.
and Burr would have been the president, Jefferson would have been the vice president. And the literal only reason that electoral vote got thrown out is because this elector was an idiot and voted for some random second person, but that random second person was a New Yorker. And there's a really obscure constitutional provision that says the president and the vice president can't be from the same state.
Right.
Burr's
yes.
a New Yorker, too. And because of that and that alone, they threw out that one electoral vote, and it ends up being a tie.
And was it then Jefferson and Adams? Then?
No, Jefferson and Burr.
And Burr.
Like, and then
it goes to vice president.
And then it goes to the House, and Jefferson becomes president.
Wow.
But had that elector just picked some random person from Georgia, Burr would have been the president.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Super fun.
Wow.
And 7 years later, this is where he ends up.
You know,
so.
This is why I come in here on Thursday, so I can really learn some amazing...
That is the best Electoral College story.
Yes,
and
is.
Like 4,000th overall, but of the Electoral College stories,
well,
that's the best one.
We bumped into this, and I'm so glad we did, because isn't my understanding that the Electoral College was supposed to be a check and balance against a populist coming into being elected? And
right.
But that it wasn't fleshed out well, and so then it became a party to the different state parties, and then they put in kind of provisions. So it's almost like a rubber stamp. Whoever voted for that number of votes for that candidate in the state, then the Electoral College delegate was bound to vote that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't supposed
it
to
wasn't
be.
It wasn't originally that way, yeah. They created this thing without really knowing what it was, and then it just evolved over time into what it is now, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a fun institution to talk about. And because it's evolved over time, like, there's a lot of crazy stuff that's happened over the years, especially in those early elections.
And I was just really excited that chop suey was invented this week.
That's your
in
segue.
In 1896, that's right, August 29th, when a chef for a Chinese ambassador wanted something that would blend the best of both American and Chinese cuisine. I'm not sure that that chef succeeded, but certainly provided a bridge.
I was going to say, like, generations of Americans fell in love with chop suey. So.
Yeah. Well, that's true. There's another one.
You can't get that anymore. Like, if that was a dish that you really liked and got behind and
that's
wanted
right.
to order somewhere,
exactly.
There's nowhere you could go.
There must be somewhere, but it's just like, where? I keep thinking there were places with that. Did it? Maybe it was more schlocky.
Yeah. Really more schlocky. Yeah, but I don't think you can get it. I've always felt kind of bad for people. People who are just absolutely in love with one particular food. Like you know, people who love Oreos, for instance. Like, what would those people's lives be if Oreos were never invented and they didn't exist? They would just be hankering or craving something, but they couldn't put their finger on what it was. Because it doesn't exist hadn't been invented, there's got to be people out there who just are in love with chop suey and want it but can't get it.
People want new experiences.
Or they can make it. I'm sure there's recipes out there.
There are
all kinds of crazy 50s dishes that are just nothing but like meat in gelatin. So I'm pretty sure you can get a chop suey recipe.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's one. That is kind of cool. It's today, August 30th, 1797 is when Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley was born.
Yep.
And, of course, she writes Frankenstein. But here's the neat part of this. Mount Tabora explodes, and during that summer, which we talked about, where it was that deep frost in North Carolina, that she was challenged to write a horror story.
Oh, that's right, yes.
And out of that comes Frankenstein.
Because they were stuck inside,
yeah,
weren't
that's
they?
Right.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
stuck inside.
Through the winter or the summer or whatever.
Can you imagine? It could have been something frothy, and we would never have known her name, but instead it becomes something that is...
That's the original NaNoWriMo, right? Like, we're stuck inside for a month, the weather's terrible, we might as well write a novel because there's nothing else to do.
You have 30 days, go!
Go, yes.
I think that's kind of cool. Another one is a local kind of connection. That same day, August 30th, 1856, Wilberforce College is established, and that's up in Ohio. The reason why I bring this up is because Elizabeth Keckley, who was in Hillsboro and then later becomes the dressmaker for Mary Todd Lincoln, African-American, was in slavery, gains her freedom. She joins that faculty of Wilberforce College and serves on there. And
that's
even
really
takes,
cool.
Because her sewing is so extraordinary, takes a group to the World's Fair in, I think it was 1892,
wow,
which is kind of amazing.
What did she teach at Wilberforce?
Sewing.
Did she teach sewing,
yeah,
or was it something?
There wasn't anything off the racks.
Yeah.
That was still being developed. Textiles begin to be developed, and then it becomes standardized. But for a long time, it's the art and craft of sewing, which is takes incredible dedication.
Because at that point, at the point in her life when she starts teaching at Wilberforce College, she could teach anything. She could teach sewing,
Civil
government,
War.
History, sociology, if
that's
they had
right.
a program yet.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It, those are the things that you kind of go, really? Who are these people? there's another one here.
We've got time for one more.
Okay.
So.
Well, this is a fella talking about disruptive events. August 29th, 1780, fellow's born, John Lafitte. He becomes a pirate. We probably wouldn't even know much about him in New Orleans, a smuggler. But he joins in with Andrew Jackson during the War of 1812, and they have the Battle of New Orleans. Now, the peace treaties had already been signed, but it's an overwhelming victory. And so, you know, you'll see I think there's some old black and white movies that extol it with Errol Flynn playing him. But anyway, it's just a show.
And they
that
still have the Jean Lafitte's bar in
I
New
think
Orleans
so. They
on the
do.
French
that's
Quarter.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, that's right. I'm just thinking about New Orleans today. I don't know why.
Did you start with New Orleans? You
well,
end
it's
with
Katrina,
New Orleans.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
there
right.
You go.
Katrina, that's right. Exactly.
All right. That was History Matters. Scott Washington, as always, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Aaron.